Welcome to 40AM in 5, a download of 40AM LLC, recorded at 2100 Eastern on Sunday, July 7th. I'm Chris Bohm, and I'd like to welcome you back to our weekly selection of tech sector-related global news and policy highlights from the past week. Coming up, the French daily Le Monde reports that surveillance similar to PRISM may be ongoing by the French DGSE. The U.S. Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board holds a meeting with President Obama and plans its first public hearing this week. The BBC reports that as many as 13 UK members of Parliament may have fallen afoul of Europe's sometimes confusing privacy rules regarding online cookies. A vote on Europe's draft regulation on privacy and data protection is delayed again, now until the fall. European and US negotiators are to begin talks this week toward a potential EU-US trade deal. The European Commission releases a report on broadband speeds available in Europe. And the European Central Bank President Mario Draghi announces an intention to hold rates low for an extended period of time. And finally, the 34-year-old U.S. space probe Voyager 1, still sending data home to NASA, stands today on the edge of interstellar space. But first, on Sunday, June 30th, The Guardian in the UK posted an article reporting that documents leaked by Edward Snowden show that 38 embassies and missions were on a list of U.S. electronic surveillance targets. Some of those belong to allies like France, Italy, Japan, and Mexico. In addition, European Union facilities in both the U.S. and Brussels were reportedly surveilled, according to reports issued by the German daily newspaper Der Spiegel on June 29th. On Monday morning, July 1st, according to the Wall Street Journal, Germany's foreign minister summoned the U.S. ambassador, demanding clarity regarding whether the U.S. had indeed spied on European Union institutions. According to Der Spiegel, the NSA, Mr. Snowden's revelations show, has worked with its British counterpart GCHQ to tap into hundreds of fiber-optic cables that cross the Atlantic or go into Europe. According to the New York Times, the disclosure has revived old concerns that the British might be helping the NSA evade American privacy protections, an accusation that U.S. officials flatly deny. Regardless, Reuters reports that the European Commission is examining whether the UK broke EU law with the operation, known as Tempora, which could lead to an infringement procedure against the UK government and financial sanctions imposed by the European Court of Justice. The latest revelations also culminated in a July 4th vote in the European Parliament to establish a special committee to investigate reports that the NSA has monitored the phone calls and emails of EU institutions and some member states. The special panel will be established within the European Parliament's Committee on Civil Liberties, Justice, and Home Affairs, and will be tasked to deliver a report by the close of the year. Members of the European Parliament are playing down any speculation that the latest revelations will in any way damage negotiations on a potential EU-US trade agreement, negotiations which are set to begin today, Monday, July 8th. As reported by Euractiv, German MEP Manfred Weber, vice chairman of the European People's Party, said that the EU should not sideline strategic interests. "We need growth and we need jobs," he added. Guy Verhofstadt, leader of the Parliament's Liberal ALDE group, added that parts of the EU-US negotiations could be frozen, citing those on data protection and data transfers, without impacting the entire agreement. However, in addition to creating the special committee on July 4th, the European Parliament voted 483-98, with 65 abstentions, in favor of backing any European Commission decision to suspend any data sharing agreements between the EU and US, including those governing passenger name records and the terrorist finance trafficking program. On July 4th, the French daily Le Monde reported that France's Foreign Intelligence Service, the DGSE, intercepts computer and telephone data on a scale similar to that of the controversial PRISM program in the US. According to Le Monde, the DGSE monitors connections within France and between France and other countries. Under the French National Security Access to Information Law, intercept requests are presented to the Prime Minister's office, which grants authorization, and interceptions are largely kept secret and do not involve courts. Authorizations are eventually presented to a special security commission that can evaluate the justification for warrant and inform the Prime Minister of any concerns. However, it is unclear whether the operation revealed by Le Monde is extra-legal or operates under the context of the existing intercept law. The operation is designed, according to experts commenting to Le Monde, to uncover terrorist cells, but the scale of the operation means that any content could be accessed at any time. The Le Monde report alleges that the retained data is culled for metadata, indicating who is communicating with whom, where, and when, and it is stored on three basement floors of the DGSE building in Paris. The French Secret Service DGSE is similar to the US NSA or Britain's MI6. On May 29th of this year, after a lengthy delay, David Medin was sworn in as chairman of the U.S. Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board. It was only 1 week later that The Guardian in the UK published a secret order from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, and succeeding revelations have thrust the U.S. into the biggest debate about privacy the country has had in decades. The board is appointed by the president. It currently consists of three Democrats, including Mr. Medin, and two Republicans. But it is empowered to act on its own to investigate any government program or regulation in and out of the intelligence realm and make recommendations on how to improve the privacy and civil liberties record in the U.S. Agency heads are supposed to turn over any documents that the board requests, and the Attorney General can issue subpoenas on the board's behalf to the private sector for investigative purposes. However, the board and each member has top security clearances, can only secretly criticize intelligence programs to Congress and to the White House if the programs are deemed too secret for the government to acknowledge publicly. The board's report to Congress on the two most discussed domestic U.S. surveillance programs will be public because each was declassified after Mr. Snowden's leaks. In each analysis, according to Mr. Medin, the board will attempt to answer several legal questions. For instance, a program may be technically okay, but is it the right thing to be doing? Does it need to be disclosed to others, and is there another way it could be done with the same effectiveness in combating terrorism, Mr. Medin suggests. The board met with President Obama on June 21st and received a classified briefing. The board's first public meeting and workshop with privacy advocates is scheduled for this Tuesday, July 9th, in Washington, D.C. On July 1st, the BBC reported that the UK Justice Secretary, Chris Grayling, is among 13 senior members of the British Parliament whose constituency websites have not been obtaining consent and gathering user data in tracking files called cookies. Since the EU's Electronic Communications Data Protection Act of 2002 was updated in 2009, campaigners have said that the law, which came into force a year ago in the UK, is largely unworkable from the perspective of how it deals with the issue of cookies and user consent. Many website owners have interpreted the law to mean that they must install pop-ups or banners, giving details of how they use cookies and make it easy for users to opt out. The UK's Data Privacy Authority, the Information Commissioner's Office, or ICO, reported to the BBC that it was difficult to determine whether the MP's websites were complying with the directive or not, and ICO would only take action if it was felt that it was causing a large number of people significant damage or distress. All 13 MPs appear to be using Google Analytics on their websites, according to the BBC, a widely used service which enables owners of the websites to gather anonymized data about how people browse their sites. The ICO did announce on July 4th that it has serious questions concerning Google's compliance with the UK Data Protection Act. Although the announcement had nothing specifically to do with analytics, the ICO believes that Google has not made it sufficiently clear how user data will be used across all of its products, according to the BBC. Other European data authorities have made similar complaints regarding Google's most recent changes to its privacy policies, and the European Commission announced a related inquiry late last week. In a statement, Google said that our privacy policy respects European law and allows us to create simpler, more effective services. We have engaged fully with the authorities involved throughout this process and will continue to do so going forward. The latest confusion in the UK and concerns voiced regarding privacy policies highlight the issues at stake in the context of Europe's ongoing revision of its data protection framework. The European Parliament's powerful Civil Liberties, Justice, and Home Affairs Committee was set to vote on a revised draft data protection regulation in late May, then delayed the vote until June. On June 19th, it announced that the orientation vote on the regulation will not take place until September or October. Article 17 of the draft regulation remains one of its most contentious, the so-called right to be forgotten, which would ostensibly attempt to facilitate a user requesting that all data made public about them be deleted. In addition, under the draft, all profiling to establish location, preferences, and behavior, or other related identifiers would be prohibited in the absence of explicit consent from a user. Only around issues specific to the protection of children online does the EU and US seem to be seeing some convergence. As reported by the Family Online Safety Institute, the eraser button concept, advanced in H.R. 1895 in the U.S. Do Not Track Kids Act from 2011, and the recently proposed California Senate Bill 568, which would allow minors to remove content that they themselves submitted to websites, are similar in some respects to the EU's right to be forgotten, but in the U.S. case, reserved for children. Tough negotiations reportedly remain over the nearly 3,000 amendments to the draft regulation, including potential aims to revive what has been called an anti-snooping clause. The so-called Article 42 has been relegated to the recitals of the draft regulation, but according to the European Observer, Justice Commissioner Viviane Reding does not object to the clause being made an article in the regulation again, particularly in the wake of most recent revelations regarding U.S. electronic surveillance of European embassies and European Union offices. In reality, the clause would do nothing to stop a PRISM-type operation by the U.S., even if the clause does get back in. But the clause would highlight an important dichotomy, that while the U.S. demands that companies maintain secrecy about requests for personal data, in the EU, the same companies are required to notify the person or persons in question that the U.S. is requesting their information. Multinational U.S. companies with subsidiaries in Europe are caught between the two legal regimes. As reported in a June 21st segment by National Public Radio on the impact of surveillance regulations on U.S. businesses, an overwhelming proportion of internet activity is still conducted through America or with American firms. Many of these companies will work voluntarily with the U.S. government in a joint effort to counter cyber attacks, where the firms are considered trusted partners. According to Jason Healy, who directs the Cyber Statecraft Initiative at the Atlantic Council, it wouldn't surprise me, and it would be very rational, for foreign companies or individuals to just decide to try to avoid American cyberspace where they can. European Union and U.S. negotiators will formally begin efforts on Monday to attempt a Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP. Both had announced the official start of free trade negotiations at the G8 summit in Lough Erne in Northern Ireland on June 17th. By forging a closer alliance, the EU and U.S. are, according to the China Daily, attempting to dominate global trade rules and influence multilateral trade mechanisms, rather than simply trying to boost mutual trade and investment. And as reported by the New York Times, the potential deal is particularly strategically important from the European perspective to counter the rising influence of China and India in the global economy. With the essential failure of the Doha round of the World Trade Organization negotiations, a US-EU deal could in effect set regulatory markers for much of the world. Even given China's global growth, EU member countries and the U.S. still account for more than 40% of world gross domestic product and almost a third of global trade, and U.S. investment in Europe is three times greater than that in Asia. Under the TTIP, the two sides expect to eliminate all agricultural and industrial tariffs on transatlantic trade, further opening respective service markets, enhance cooperation in public purchasing and policymaking, and establish new regulations in sectors like competition, labor, and environmental protection. In addition, last year the US and EU agreed on the common goal and strategy of urging better protection of intellectual property rights, as well as agreeing on common approaches to some issues concerning market entry in countries like China, Japan, and Russia. However, many experts believe that any deal faces long odds. France has already raised objections about its cultural exception, which is aimed at protecting subsidized domestic movies and television programs. The implications from the digital economy which many Europeans see as dominated by U.S. firms, on the proliferation of national cultural content is considered key for France. And there may also be more serious problems involving agricultural disputes over genetically modified foods and chlorinated chicken, as well as regulatory questions about car safety, pharmaceuticals, and financial derivatives, as well as other financial products and bank branching rules. Although both parties hope to conclude a deal by November 2014, if there are multiple exemptions and opt-outs, the meaning of such an exercise will be limited. On June 26, the European Commission released a report on broadband in Europe, detailing that European consumers are largely not getting the internet speeds they are paying for. According to Commission Vice President Neelie Kroes, this is the first time that the difference between advertised speeds and actual broadband speeds has been confirmed by comparable and reliable data from all EU member states. According to the study on fixed broadband performance, European consumers, on average, receive only 74% of the advertised headline speed that they've paid for. Of the broadband delivery methodologies surveyed, cable was the highest performer, with roughly 91% of cable internet users receiving the speeds advertised to them. 84% of fiber subscribers received advertised speeds, while DSL subscribers lagged behind at a distant third, at 63%. The average download speed across all countries and methodologies surveyed was 19 megabits per second at peak hours, with fiber-delivered services ranking the highest speeds on average, with 41 megabits per second downloads. However, the study also showed that upload speeds, critical for interactive applications, lagged significantly across multiple broadband delivery methodologies in Europe. Only fiber-delivered broadband averaged a significant 19.8 megabits per second upload, with cable at 3.68 megabits per second and DSL at 0.69 megabits per second, respectively. The Commission study will run through 2014, with two more annual reportings planned. European consumers are encouraged by the Commission to join the study and measure their own ISP's performance by registering online and receiving a small device to measure their connections. The project is being run by broadband performance testing specialist Sam Knows, which has already conducted similar projects in both the UK and the US. European Central Bank President Mario Draghi said last week that bank lending rates will remain at current or lower levels for an extended period of time. This marks the first time that the central bank has given an indication of its intended future guidance on rates of interest in the Eurozone, and couples with the bank's decision to leave interest rates at historic low levels of 0.5% at its meeting on Thursday, July 4th. Mr. Draghi would not comment further on his reasons for this departure on reporting of intended bank rates, only saying that the change will not be for 6 months or 12 months, but for an extended period, adding that the decision of the central bank was unanimous. The euro fell sharply on the news, marking a fall of 0.8% against the dollar to $1.2903 to the euro. Along with Portugal, several Eurozone member countries are still failing to deliver on economic growth targets, including France, Spain, Italy, and Greece. And finally, launched way back in 1977, the U.S. space probe Voyager 1 has now traveled so far from home, nearly 18.5 billion kilometers from Earth, that the constant chatter of data that it puts out takes 17 hours to reach Earth and NASA computers in the U.S. According to NASA, as reported in a piece by the BBC, the spacecraft is likely poised on the edge of the sun's domain, ready to push out beyond the solar system, the first man-made craft to do so. The particles streaming away from the sun have by now been reduced to a trickle. In 2004, Voyager reached a turbulent region of the solar system known as the heliosheath. This was expected to be the final stage before its leap into interstellar space, but the milestone instead brought about a discovery: a distinct boundary region at the edge of the solar system, now called the heliosheath depletion region. Once the spacecraft is beyond the sun's magnetic influence, it will truly be in uncharted territory. But as reported by the BBC, like a surfer who rides the edge of a wave, Voyager will take some time to move completely out of the boundary zone. This edge may be turbulent. We just don't know, according to officials. Voyager 1 is on course to approach a star called AC 793888, but we'll only get within 2 light-years of it, and it will take roughly 40,000 years to make the trip. The Voyager has sufficient power in its plutonium cells to keep working well into the next decade, according to NASA, but to date, nearly every milestone with the Voyager has been a surprise. You have been listening to 40ANM in 5, a production of 40ANM LLC. For more information, visit 40a-m.com. All stories for this week's podcast were reported by at least 2 online or print news sources, or taken directly from relevant releases, with the exception of specific reporting highlighted today from National Public Radio, Reuters, China Daily, The Wall Street Journal, Le Monde, Euractiv, the BBC, and The New York Times. We will be back with you on Monday, July 15th. Until then, make this week one to remember, and bye for now.